The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Is it loud enough, my volume? Yeah? Okay. So, I would like to talk about a tender topic. A topic that I think should be approached with a lot of care and respect, and maybe reverence. And that is the topic of anger. And the reason for the care around the topic is that it's probably nice to think that the sources of anger in a human being come from a place that's quite deep and tender, a place of touching some of the deepest issues of our human life. And so to talk about anger, to do it respectfully and carefully, it's a little bit hard because it's easy to make statements about it as if it's an easy topic or, you know, just don't be angry. You know, that sometimes Buddhism is criticized for having an unrealistic attitude towards anger because the general Buddhist idea is you want to overcome anger or uproot it or not be angry. Whereas in the West, there's all kinds of justified angers that people have. And it has some truth to it, this distinction, but it's mostly around the fact that in Buddhism, the Buddhist word for anger, the Buddhist understanding of anger, is very kind of narrow, whereas the Western use of the word is quite wide. It covers a wider expanse of emotion. And in Buddhism, anger always has hostility as part of it. So if you hear Buddhist discussions about anger, then you should always kind of just substitute hostility. And then I think you'll find your way. But I'm not going to keep it that narrow today, though we might want to keep this in mind, because even justifiable anger can be misdirected or can be acted on in very harmful ways. But one way or the other, anger is toxic in many ways. Certainly hostile anger is toxic. It can ruin lives, it can ruin relationships, it can ruin all kinds of things when it kind of festers or builds up or gets, you know, expressed in a variety of ways. And so to bring mindfulness into all aspects of our lives, it's necessary to bring it into the area of anger and to really take it on as a subject of mindfulness that's worthy of mindfulness, and not only worthy in and of itself, but because it's connected to deep roots inside of us, it's worthy for really dropping into the depths of who we are and connecting to us in ourselves in a very important way. And issue around anger that I want to kind of, or the how I want to like to frame it or approach it today, is that is not with the word anger, but rather with the word mad. I asked last night my wife, I said, what's the difference between anger and mad? And she said, there is no difference. So that's the authority from home. So I took it to heart, and then I looked it up in the dictionary, my dictionary said that the word mad in English, you have this in American English as well, but in English, mad is also means insane. And so I kind of like to distinguish, at least for the purposes of this talk, between anger and mad. And for me, to be mad is to be possessed by the anger. or to be caught in the anger, or to have sunk into the anger, to draw, to kind of, and so we're attached to it, or we're somehow not free of it, but we've identified it quite strongly, so it's possessed us. We're a little bit, you know, none of you, of course, but a little bit insane with the anger. And so one of the functions of mindfulness practice is not necessarily to get rid of things like anger, but rather to help us not be stuck in it, to help us not be possessed by the emotions that we have, to be able to kind of pull out of it, to be able to see it in a clear way, a spacious way, in a wise way, so that we can be wise with whatever emotions we have. We can be wise about the anger. And that even justifiable anger, if there's such a thing, we could get stuck in and not really get possessed by it in such a way we don't, our wisdom is not there. The classic image in Buddhism is the idea of being stuck in quicksand. And it's very difficult to get out. My image that is the image of kind of putting my sticking one foot deep into a not just a puddle, but a big hole of mud, and it takes a lot of work to pull the foot out, pull it out, especially so the foot doesn't the shoe doesn't fall off, and it's kind of work to pull it out. Finally, you pull it out, and it feels so good to be back on dry ground, and you can look at that big mud hole, and you know you're not in it. So the same way, mindfulness can pull us out of the mud holes that we get stuck in, the emotional reactivities that we get. Fall into, and we get possessed. We identify with it. It becomes who we are. And when we don't have any sense of healthy distance or separation or spaciousness around it, we are the emotion in such a way that there's not access to a lot of clarity or wisdom or, it's almost like the anger then is speaking rather than we are speaking. And not a few people have discovered that they have tremendous regrets about things they said in anger that weren't planned, weren't thought about, or just got blurted out. And sometimes that's just 2 seconds of some angry statement can cause years and years of problems in a relationship or in life. And they say, what was I thinking? What took over? I was possessed by the anger and spoke. So the question about what I want to try to do then is to talk about 7 approaches, 7 maybe approaches or maybe steps about how to pull ourselves out of the mud of anger so that we're not possessed by it. So I call it from mad to madless. And madless is just kind of a cute thing because I make it into an acronym. And so I'll talk about this acronym. And so it's motivation, awareness, dissipation, discharging, and learning, empathy, story, and then less S, because we ran out of S's, there's 2 S's. It has great, has 2 functions for 2 things, and that is speaking and sharing. So really 8. But you won't get angry if I call it 7. I couldn't get myself to add another S to madless. Madless. Like a snake. So these are different areas that we can look at and pay attention to if what we want to do is not to be sunk into the anger, into the madness. And so motivation, what this is, what is the purpose of the anger? Not necessarily what your intention is at the moment, but what is the anger trying to accomplish? I think it can be a great question, because sometimes we don't think about it, we just are angry, and we don't kind of, that's just it. And but anger, I think of anger as always having it's trying to accomplish something. What is it trying to accomplish? Psychologists talk about that anger sometimes is connected to the fight versus flight instinct. So it wants to fight, or sometimes it wants to run away. It wants to push something away. It wants to make a very definitive and clear no, stop. It wants to blame. It wants to attack. It wants to defend. It wants to protect. There's a whole slew of things that anger can be involved in. Some of them which in and of themselves be quite healthy. Some of them which can be unhealthy. And even if they're healthy, is anger the best way to accomplish what we're trying to do when we're angry? So to begin asking ourselves, what is this trying to accomplish for me? Is a beginning of separating ourselves from it, to take an honest look at it. And if we can see what it's trying to accomplish, then some people will say, well, I don't know if I want to do that. I've known people who when they're angry, will blame people, other people. And the blaming sometimes is unconscious. They don't connect it to themselves, to the anger that they have. But it's really kind of, you know, closely connected. And so they start seeing that they're looking to find blame in people. If that, you know, is that really what they want to do? Is that reasonable? Is that what should be done? Or should that energy of anger go someplace else or be held some other way or approached some other way? And so to consider carefully, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? What's the purpose of the anger? Maybe the subconscious purpose that we haven't even thought about it. The next one, and that's supported by the first, is to bring awareness to the whole process of being angry. And this is, you know, a big part of what mindfulness is, that mindfulness has to do with bringing careful attention to our experience and what's going on. And anger is not only a worthy subject for mindfulness, there are times when it's a crucial subject for mindfulness if the alternative is to cause harm through our anger. And so to stop and take a good look at anger and become aware of it, study it, understand it as it manifests, can teach us a variety of different things. It's very helpful to understand all the different expressions within us of what anger is, the physiological expressions of it, the heat and the anger and the tension we carry. It's helpful to focus on the mental energies and understand what goes on there. It's helpful to understand how we act and react when we're angry. Some people can be angry, and that's a setup to be triggered by all kinds of things in the environment that normally they would not be triggered by. And so by paying attention to when we're angry, studying our anger, being aware of it, we start seeing what's going on within us, and we start seeing what consequences we have and how we react based on that. Both of those will give us a platform by which to learn to see and recognize anger in the future so we can be wiser about it. We even sometimes see it coming. Oh, here it comes, like that feeling in my stomach, you know, that heat. I think it's coming. And so now, okay, now I better be careful. I better be careful what I say now. Or maybe this is a time to go to the bathroom. And all kinds of things can be discharged in the bathroom. So to become familiar with our personal experience of it. And how does it work for us? I think every individual person probably has their own unique ways of that anger is expressed or found or how it lives within them. So become, you know, don't read a book about it so much as read the book inside of you. Take time to learn it and get to know it. And to do so, to clearly learn how to recognize it and see it, to be mindful of it, is a very important step in this pulling ourselves out of the mud. Because what we're looking for in mindfulness is not only to study the experience, but in its essence, mindfulness is also to discover a clarity of attention, a clarity of awareness, clarity of recognition, where we are distinct or independent from what it is we're being aware of. There's such clarity, such kind of strength or oomph behind the knowing, that the knowing is really free from what is known. And that creates you know, that's the pulling out of the mud. And you can feel that sometimes. You can feel sometimes if you're sitting and you're very centered in meditation, very peaceful, and the mind is not caught by anything, and you kind of, you know, a lot of clarity, then, you know, with no effort on your part, your mind remembers, you know, the high school sweetie and what happened. And you can feel the pull of that memory. You can feel the sinking into the mud. That has a very different feeling than standing clear and standing separate from it. And we feel we're diving in a sense, to become possessed by it again. And that's a phenomenal thing to be able to watch and see in your own mind. To watch, to really watch the forces of the mind, what it's like to be free and peaceful, and what it's like to start being pulled down into the mud of our preoccupation. And so to practice mindfulness of anger is a way of beginning to pull ourselves out of the mud. Some people do not want to do this. Some people absolutely, clearly, definitively do not want to not be in their anger. Some people are so invested in anger, it's so important for them, they're so stubborn, it's such a powerful strategy for protecting themselves, for defining themselves, for establishing some kind of self versus other boundary that they think somehow is going to do something good, that they're really, they're really committed to the anger. And to hear the idea that you're supposed to do mindfulness and really see it clearly enough so you pull out of it and not be it is a foreign idea or a threatening idea even. But this is part of what mindfulness is. So the awareness practice, to be aware of it, is to become aware of what it actually is, how it's experienced in the moment, how we're triggered by the anger, how we act based on it, and then to learn how to have this be pulled out of the mud. The third way of helping us get out of the mud is dissipation of the energy, of the charge, discharging. And sometimes there's so much charge around the anger, the whole system is kind of like ready to burst or pop, or there's so much churning, it's like a volcano in there sometimes. And it's not a good, it can be sometimes not a good space or good kind of way of being in the world, because we can be so ready to be just kind of triggered by whatever happens. And so we can't speak with clarity or wisdom, or you try to have a conversation about the conflict you have, but the volcano is just, you know, it's too big to be able to have a reasonable conversation. And so how do you discharge all that energy and that tension? So first is to recognize that it's important to do that. It's important to do the bathroom break, or it's important to go walk around the block. I remember many years ago here at IMC, sitting right here actually, I was teaching with someone, and we had a disagreement. And so we have to go talk, so we went to the conference room. And it was hard conversation, and I could feel the charge building up. And at some point, I said, "Could we just sit quietly for a few minutes, rather than continuing with the conversation?" So if I could recognize what was happening to me, and I knew this is not—I'm not going to be any use for anybody in this conversation. Can we just sit quietly for a couple of minutes? So we did, and then the whole thing. The energy, that unhelpful energy, dissipated enough that then we could have a productive conversation, and then the whole thing worked out fine. So, exercise, a journal, talk to friends, you know, neutral parties, have some way of discharging it, of somehow settling it. A powerful one for sometimes is just time. Sometimes people are in a hurry to resolve things. And some things are better to be resolved after the things have been discharged a little bit. So then we can come back and be in a much more reasonable space. And time is often a good healer of the charge of anger. And, you know, just wait a few days, wait a week, and things will settle down, and then there'll be more space, and then you can be ready. So if you want to not be possessed by the madness and be able to pull out, then, learning how to discharge is helpful. And then the L of madless is to learn. And this is involves studying your anger. It's different than mindfulness, but this becoming a student of anger. What is really going on when you're angry? What are the underlying psychological factors that come into play with anger? What are the roots of the anger in you? And I think I like to think of anger, I don't know if it's always true, but I often take this perspective in looking at anger, that anger is a symptom of something deeper. And the task is to discover that deeper thing. And in times when I've been really angry, the thing I find that works really well for me, partly because it dissipates some of the energy, but also because it allows the energy to kind of course through me in a more fluid way. And that is, I go for long walks. And there's something about the long walk, like in the hills or something, something about the energy of the walk that frees up the thinking around it. I don't get stuck in it. I don't get attached to it. And so then it begins to flow more, and my thinking starts to flow more. And in that flowing of my thinking, I'm kind of letting my thoughts do what they do. I'm watching what's happening. I'm allowing myself to be angry. And I'm just being with the experience, being with the experience, being with the experience, until, in my case, I see one of two things. Either I am hurt or I'm afraid. And when I see that, then bingo. Then I know I've kind of dropped below the symptom to the cause or the underlying condition. And then the whole thing, the whole situation begins to shift. And then I understand so much what really needs to be addressed and touched with. And it's almost like the anger is like the, I don't know, it's like the packaging. And now I've opened the package, I get the present. So then to work with work with the fear and the sadness, and sometimes it's also I said hurt, or did I say hurt and fear in my case? But sometimes it's sadness that people have. So those three, and once that's recognized, those things, then it's easier to step back from the anger. It's a lot easier not to be possessed by the anger. In fact, sometimes the anger becomes uninteresting, incidental, you know, just kind of like, who cares about the anger now? Now that we've gotten to what's more primary. So to learn about the anger, to study it, how it works, is good. And there's all kinds of things we can learn, but study anger, and, read about it, and there's books and things. If you don't like reading books, you know, there's probably articles. And if you don't like articles, read the Wikipedia entry on anger. And I read it this morning as homework for my talk. And I thought it was kind of interesting to read it, what it had to say. And I learned about one Buddhist sutra on anger that I didn't know about. And so I followed the link and read the whole thing, and wow, thank you, Wikipedia. It taught me about Buddhism. But I thought it was, some of the things they said there, I thought were quite provocative and quite evocative. It's almost like you go through it and stop and just think about it for a while. Think, you know, how does this work for me? How does this work for me? Anyway, so study it, learn about it. And then the E part of madness is empathy. So to have empathic attention to the other and to yourself. And empathy is closely related for some people to compassion, to really feel what's going on, recognize what's happening at an emotional level with people. Other people who are angry, it's often, and ourselves as well, it often represents their suffering in some way. And can we understand that suffering? People will often act angry impulsively when they're under a lot of stress. I've known people who've been very ill. I have a relative who's quite ill and sometimes has no bandwidth. And so there's kind of this, you know, little bit of a snarly kind of pushback, you know, or you feel kind of the anger there. Makes sense, and the stress and the exhaustion of it all. And people who have some kind of tragedy in their life, there's a person might have, someone's dying in their family. It's a very stressful situation. And they go to work, and they don't have any bandwidth to handle any kind of added stress at work. And so they just suddenly blare out and are angry. But if we understand people, what they're struggling with, life is difficult for people. And to really take that in and understand, then we don't forgive people necessarily for their anger because of that. But we can have a lot more empathy and care and compassion and more space and not take it so personally. And same thing for ourselves. It's hard to be a human being. It's hard to find our way in this life and to deal with all the stresses and challenges that we have growing up and with life in general. And some of our angry impulses, it's best not to take it too personally. It's just kind of like the whole system is just struggling with, all this deep stress that human life can be about. So to have empathy and care and compassion. And there's a whole kind of slew of emotions that can come along with empathy. And there might be forgiveness. There might be kindness. There might be generosity and, all kinds of things. So that's another way to pull out, is to take the time to have empathic connection to yourself and to the other people involved. And then the first S is story. I think that most forms of anger, certainly the mad kind, I was trying to figure out, what's the difference between anger and mad? And I tried out for a little bit to wonder if it's the same distinction as between fear and anxiety. Fear is more of a general emotion that has a lot to do with, have to do with standing on the edge of a cliff and the mountain lion's coming. It makes sense to have fear. Psychologists sometimes reserve anxiety to fear that has an imaginary component. Not that it's, that has to do with imagining a future, predicting a future, thinking about a future in some way, and people have anxious. So I was wondering if, we can say that anger is more the general, sometimes if someone does something suddenly that's threatening, be angry. But that mad has more to do with imagination and stories. But that didn't go over with my wife. So she's the one who kind of taught me a lot of my English, so I'm careful. She's still teaching me English. It's not my native first language, so it's kind of hard sometimes, this English thing. But still, a story. The story that we make, the imaginations we have, the stories we have about the future, where this is going, stories about what this is all about, stories about why a person's doing that. There's a lot of story making, assumptions that go into being angry, or being mad at least. And so to look at the story making mind, the beliefs we have. What are we telling ourselves when we're angry? This can be somewhat subconscious, but if you have the idea, what is the story? And maybe even get a journal and start writing out the story. You might start seeing that actually you have a belief system, you have ideas of what's really happening. And I suspect that a percentage of people's anger has more to do with the stories they tell than anything else. Someone got angry with me recently. They said that because I hadn't responded to an email. And this anger was kind of strong. I was surprised by this. And then I thought, well, I thought I did, but I didn't say it because I couldn't quite remember. And I went back and looked, and sure enough, I did. Now, so the story was that Gil hadn't responded to the email. And so that's a story. Is it true? And sometimes you can go check. Or the person, So it can be quite simple, the story, or it can be quite elaborate. So what's the story connected to the anger? A fascinating thing and very helpful thing to do if you're angry with someone that you can have a conversation with is you tell each other's story. This is my story of what it's all about. And this is my story of what you did and why you did it and all that. And this, tell me your story. And then sometimes we discover that the stories are quite different. And if it's really different, then it's like, you know, turns out that you're like two ships passing in the dark, even though there was light and you saw each other. So story. So that also can pull us out of being possessed. And then the next S is to speak. Sometimes it's very important to speak the anger, to speak about it. And hopefully, having done all the other processes first, the speaking can be wise and useful. But sometimes anger is because of conflict and difficulty between people. And they need to be addressed sometimes. We have to go sit down and talk to people and work it out. And this whole Buddhist thing about mindfulness is not an alternative to talking about things, but rather it's a way of talking and working out conflict in healthy ways, hopefully. So go talk to people, speak it. And sometimes what we're angry about, like social injustice, needs to be spoken about and spoken up. But maybe we do it without being mad, but we do it with passion. So what is it has to be talked about? It has to be spoken when we're angry so that we're not enmeshed in it, caught in it. Sometimes we need to be able to tell the person we're angry with that we're angry, but do it in a way that doesn't threaten them. And that's why understanding whether there's fear, hurt, or sadness underneath it is so helpful. Because if you go to someone and say, I'm angry with you, a good percentage of people will immediately put up their defenses. But if you go to them and say, you know, when you said X, I felt really hurt, or really, I became afraid. Then the defenses usually don't go up. And they're, oh, really? Oh, they'll say, tell me more. Then they're willing to have a conversation. It's easier for them. But you're still talking about the issue. And then you might even want to say later, after you talked for, I was hurt so much that I've spent the last 24 hours fuming. but you've had this whole conversation beforehand that maybe it's good for them to know the impact they had, but by the time you get around to say you're fuming, their defenses are down and there's been rapport and it's all been talked about. The last S that shouldn't be there is kind of like a... sometimes it's just a good, you know, capping thing to do at the very end of certain kinds of bouts of difficult anger. We have people, conflict and arguments and stuff. And sometimes it's the strategy of last resort. Nothing else works. Try this. So sometimes it's the kind of the culmination of a good process, and sometimes it's because nothing works. Give them a gift. Share. So the word is share. Share something. Giving is a tremendously powerful medicine in our social lives. And figure out what you can give. I mean, it doesn't have to be big and dramatic, but it's hard for people to hold stuck in their attachments, their stubbornness, and their... If something is offered, here, have this. And it could, you know, please, I was thinking about you, and there was... really nice Brussels sprouts in the market. And I thought about you, and I know you like Brussels sprouts here. And they can't resist the Brussels sprouts, so they're going to take it. So study the motivation, bring attention to the whole phenomena of your anger, dissipate the charge, learn about the anger, study it in all kinds of ways you can study it. Have empathy. study the story. Understand the story is connected to the anger. And speak. And then share. If you want to not be mad, if you don't want to be possessed by the anger, sunk in the mud of your anger. But if you do, just warn the rest of us. So, those are my thoughts. So, we have about 5 minutes. And many years ago now, it was a sitting group in a living room of someone's house in San Jose. It's now the San Jose sitting group at the Quaker Meeting House down there, but started in someone's living room. And I showed up to give a little talk, and I said, today I'm going to talk about enlightenment. But before I do you have any questions? And so we never talked about enlightenment because we spent the whole evening then, 45 minutes, talking about anger. That seemed like anger was more interesting than enlightenment. And maybe because it's, you know, more pertinent or more directly pertinent for people. So, do you have any questions now about what I talked about or about enlightenment? Please.
Thank you, Gil. Can you expand your perspective beyond the private to the public, our body politic, perhaps?
Yeah, I think that the important distinction there is recognize what kind of passionate, maybe anger, strong anger, is useful and what is not. And if someone holds very strong political views, feels very threatened or feels very angry by what's happening, how to have that anger without being possessed by it. And so that's this whole process here, so that I talked about today. But the danger, I think, in the public sphere is when people are possessed by their anger. And you know, it's so easy to get caught up in the drama and the politics and the views of the moment. You know, there are trends over time about views and politics, and people change their views over time. And so we need to look a little bit about how we relate to what goes on in the public sphere when it doesn't directly affect us. We get it from the news. Are we identified with it? Are we identified with our opinions? We have to look at how we hold our opinions, and are we using it to define ourselves and define ourselves against other people? There's a whole bunch of stuff to study there, to look at, that might be on the edges around the passionate no, the passionate sense of this has to stop or something. That if we don't look at that stuff that's around the edges, we could actually cause a lot of harm. And so I think this kind of practice of mindfulness and what I'm teaching today for the public sphere can kind of clean up the edges so that we can be in conversation with people, for example. You know, imagine that there's a politician that you're really angry what the politician does. But then it turns out you find yourself sitting next to each other on the bus. You know, and like, wow, you know, and the person that asks you, how are you? And you go, you can have a conversation. And so then you just dump all your anger on the person. Maybe that was a lost opportunity. But if you weren't angry, maybe you could have a reasonable conversation. Maybe there's some possibility of some kind of discussion. And so, you know, you want to be prepared. So those are my first thoughts. Is that adequate?
A good start.
A good Zen teacher Only answers 30% of a question. So, I'll take that as a compliment. So I saw a hand, straight back into Audrey. Could you take the mic, please? So I'm so fond of Audrey today, specifically. So nice that you're here and that you're speaking, because I went through yesterday all of the IMC's newsletters to see the history of what we did, and Audrey's name popped out in 2003 as being the volunteer director. And I felt so touched that how long it's been. It was so warming to see that there. I kind of forgotten how long ago that was, and here you are. So I just wanted to share that. I was just seeing you stand. That's a question. I was touched. And
well, thank you. I often think of those days with great fondness. What I was thinking of is that I have found that anger, that we use anger sometimes to justify an action that we want to do or not do. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to go to that meeting because I was angry, or I'm not going to speak to that person because they made me angry. And once I realize that, then I can deal with the issue underneath.
Great. That's a great point. And that raises kind of another issue I didn't touch on. But I think related to strong desire that leads to anger, I have to have my way, it's the chances are there's a lot of self-centeredness, selfishness in that. And I have the suspicion that when anger becomes hostility, I think I have a suspicion that one of the underlying things for the hostility is selfishness, yeah. Self-centeredness. So to be able to look deeper down and study that, so I think maybe also a desire, if I have to have what I want, get out of my way, or I'll just gonna be angry in order to get it. It's a great point. Thank you. Great. So madless is a good thing to be. So maybe during this week, if you have the occasion to get, slightly irritated or more, why don't you don't just go on with your business as usual, whatever you usually do. Why don't you figure out some way or other to fully stop and go sit someplace or go for a walk, and then just maybe review this talk or look at it in a new way. See if you can really study it, look at it, try to understand it, and delve into it and see if some of these steps of the madless are useful, or all of them are useful. Run the exercise. Learning about your anger, studying it respectfully, tenderly, with reverence, because of how deeply rooted it is in us, is a really worthwhile enterprise. If we just treat anger as a surface phenomena, we miss the opportunity to go deep inside. So take that opportunity. Thank you.